Now more with Sandy Clough and Sean Drotar, presented by Superbook Sports. Download the Superbook app and start winning today at superbook.com. This is Sandy and Sean on Mile High Sports.
Well, when we decided to bring in Dr. Rick Bray, of course, a regular visitor to the program, we didn't really think we'd have to talk about the mental hurdles taken to recover from injury and illness and that put your career at risk, but here we are. Dr. Rick Bray, think1foryou.org is the website. Of course, he's worked with the Broncos as a performance coach and teams all over the sporting world. I don't want to burn the whole entire segment talking about it, but Dr. Rick, thanks for joining us on the program here. And obviously the news that Tim Patrick, who comes back from the torn ACL last year, comes back out, first days in pads, tears the left Achilles. It was the right ACL last year. His career, obviously, in some jeopardy. He turns 30 in November. KJ Hamler gets diagnosed with pericarditis. He had, of course, had the pec injury in the offseason. The Broncos waive him with non-football injury. And, of course, he's had the problems with the ACL and the mental health challenges as well. So for the players themselves, the next steps for them, and for the Denver Broncos, who probably feel over the last couple of years as if they've just had buzzard's luck. And sometimes you feel like you can't shake that, even though, you know, coincidence is not necessarily anything that you can do much about.
Right. Well, first of all, thank you guys for having me, Sandy and Sean. It's great to be back with you guys. Yeah, you know, it seems like that's a tough break and a tough break for the Broncos in terms of Tim Patrick. But, you know, I've always said that, you know, preparation really makes your luck, and preparation really is the foundation of, you know, destination and in operation every day. So I think, you know, yeah, tough ACL last year, torn Achilles this year.
Yeah.
That is not good. I mean, it's really tough for one athlete to endure that. But we've seen that before. This isn't the first time that's ever happened necessarily at Denver, but all over the league. You know, it's just one of those things that a coach will tell you that it's not what happens in life. We have what's called the 10-90 rule in psychological performance, and that is life is 10% of what happens and 90% of how you react to it.
Yeah.
So it's not that Tim's out now. It's like, what are they going to do? How are they going to respond to it? You know, how's Tim going to respond to it? And then how are the players at his position coach? You know, as you guys know, I don't only work with players, but I work with coaches throughout the league. And I can tell you this, there are a lot of coaches that have a really asset-based thinking, and there's coaches that have deficit-based thinking. So it's all going to start at the top. It's all going to start with Peyton and the way he creates the climate and culture every day. And then that'll trickle down with his coordinators and position coaches. But, you know, it is bad news. It's not good news. But it's life goes on in the NFL, as you guys know. We got to be able to carry on. And, again, the 10-90 rule proceeds right here.
It obviously is devastating news if you know Tim Patrick at all, know his story, and I know you're familiar with it.
Yep.
Undrafted free agent out of Utah in 2017, hooked on with the Broncos in 2018, basically, you know, special teams guy when he did play in 18 and 19. Vic Fangio's first year, Vic Fangio didn't think very much of Tim Patrick, but thought a lot more of him the next 2 years when he caught 51 and 53 passes, was a good receiver on third down. But it again, from a psychological point of view, a week ago, you would have said, boy, the Broncos may not have great players established at wide receiver, but they have a lot of players who look like they could be fixtures,
right,
if not out-and-out stars right now. And all of a sudden, you lose one of the guys you were sort of counting on to be your lead possession receiver, maybe even a guy who could operate out of the slot. There's a trickle-down effect, but in your view, if there's going to be a 1,000-yard receiver this year for the Broncos, I think it's going to be Jerry Jeudy. Does this increase the pressure, psychological and otherwise, on somebody like Jerry Jeudy, who the last six games of last year did look the part of a number one NFL wide receiver?
Yeah, no, I don't think it increases the pressure. I think it gives him a green light, a great opportunity for him to be kind of that go-to guy. But here's what also it does. It opens up other spots. You guys know by mid-September, we'll be sitting here talking about who stepped up in that position. You know, it'll be someone on this roster. They may get someone. They may acquire someone through, you know, through the cutdowns, whatever it may be. You know, personnel, I got to tell you, since way back in 1983 when I was a rookie with the Broncos, one of the things I was astounded by is the minuscule difference between a starter and a backup. You know, oftentimes all a backup needs is an opportunity. There's other people on this roster that can play that receiver spot.
Let me ask you about on that point. Kendall Hinton.
Yeah. I mean, all people need is a chance, Sandy. That's all they need is a chance and opportunity. Throw them the ball. And I'm not saying everyone on the roster can do that, but you have two or three guys on this roster that can, quote unquote, make us forget about Tim Patrick. I'll guarantee you that. So, you know, all the love and appreciation to Tim, and, you know, I hope you heal quickly. But there's somebody's going to step up. That's just the nature of this game. There are so many talented players. I tell this to my clients day in and day out in sports and performance psychology, is there's thousands of guys walking the street from the neck down that can play. Thousands of them. But from the neck up, there's not a lot of them. So if you're willing to do the work from the neck up, the mental preparation, the mental protocols and techniques that we teach, then, you know, the neck down is really simple, to be honest with you, because every guy who's out there can play. You know, they've proven themselves at the college level. I'm not saying they're necessarily a future all-pro player or Hall of Famer, but they can play at this level, Sandy. I mean, you guys have seen over the years. I don't have to name names, but there's guys that were very average from the neck down. And they became very good players for the Broncos because they were good from the neck up. So we'll see some players step up. It'll give the Broncos that much more of an opportunity to show how much work they're doing in the personnel departments to get some kids that can play and let them show their stuff.
That's the part I think is interesting, because we can talk about the players there, and you're right, but you've talked about working with coaches too. There can be a temptation. I think the Broncos have fallen victim to that, of believing that, okay, well, we find these guys and we've identified them, and they're going to show up, and they're going to be able to be stars and be impactful players. But they're at times you're off on that. You can look at the potential, and it's great to be optimistic about potential, but you can also miss on potential.
Yes.
And in the Broncos case, now we're looking at these injuries behind Jerry Jeudy and Cortland Sutton. It is all potential.
Right.
And when you count on this, we see this at times. We just talked about the Colorado Rockies and their trade situation. When you get teams that try to have four or five or six different guys, and you believe that they will all blossom simultaneously, you are setting yourself up for disappointment, because that's not how it works either. It's not always linear.
Right. No, but you know, this brings up a point that I often say, and I help coaches understand, how well do you develop your players? You know, it's one thing to get players in the door, whether it's through the draft or free agency, undrafted after the draft, but how well do you develop your players? How well do you identify talent and bring players along? Because there's some teams that are basically throwaway teams, and they're like, you know, if you don't show potential in the first 6 months of your rookie year, then you're probably not going to progress up their depth charts. But there's other teams that are willing to develop their players, and they have a whole program. I've been part of a few teams that were really good at developing players, developing undrafted players into very good special teams players. I mean, I've been around, I've told my sons this, because my sons play linebacker at the high school and college levels. If you're 6'1 to 6'3 and you're 220 to 240 and you can run a 4.6, there's a job for you in the NFL, because you can play special teams.
Right.
I don't think a lot of people realize how many players never play from scrimmage. They're just special teams players, and they make careers. Mike Thomas for the Cincinnati Bengals has never been a starter at safety, and he's in his 12th or 13th year. From
Slater with the Patriots.
Out of Stanford, absolutely. And these
guys been around even longer.
Yeah, so it's not just developing starters. It's developing functional players that we can plug in here and there. But I'll tell you what, again, every time there's a deficit, there's also an asset. It's a yin and a yang. And with Tim Patrick going down, there's going to be some assets that come out of this experience for the Denver Broncos.
All right. You knew the question was coming. You even brought it up during the break. What was going through Sean Payton's mind last week when he sat down with Jared Bell of USA Today and unleashed on anybody and everybody?
Yeah. You explained it. Two lattes, right? Doesn't that happen to everybody when you have a couple Coffees? No.
Well, I think the question is what was not going through his brain. In the technical term, we'd say his postsynaptic terminal of his brain was blocked and the energy went somewhere else instead of making a lock and key fit where you're actually functioning in your neurological process. No, to put it in a layperson's terms, he wasn't operating from the upper cortical structure. He was operating at a lower brain level. It became really primal and it became very reptilian in the way he talked about it, meaning that, you know, he just said what came to his mind. You have to have filters. You have to be able to be articulate and really be charismatic for that job. It's a CEO job, guys. Let's be honest with you. It's not necessarily what it doesn't matter how much Sean Payton knows about positions. It doesn't matter how much he knows about scheme. Those are for the coordinators. He has to be a CEO. He has to be a great, not a good, a great communicator. He has to be charismatic. There's a way to send those messages about Nathaniel Hackett without chopping his head off, okay? You know, and I hear what Roger says yesterday. He's like, you know, keep my coach's mouth, your name out of your mouth.
Right. And he also said it came from an insecure place.
Right.
For an accomplished coach like Peyton to be that insecure. And he also said, and I want your reaction to this, because it was a psychological judgment he was making, Rogers was making about Peyton, that he's doing it to soften the landing if things go bad for the Broncos in 2023.
Well, I'll tell you what, if Rogers doesn't play so well in the next few years, he can have a job as a team psychologist.
Can join you?
Yeah, because he's got this thing figured out. He's two steps ahead. I think he was right on the money when he talked about insecurity.
I do too.
I've seen that from day one.
I think it came from that place.
I'm going to tell you something. You know, Sandy, how much I look at nonverbal communication. Right. Ever since I've watched Sean Payton on the sidelines, that's rung out to me about insecurity. Now, everyone's insecure. I'm insecure. You guys are to a certain degree.
Sure.
But at that position, players watch you. They watch your nonverbal communication. There's something about Sean Payton that, to me, does not seem right in terms of his nonverbal communication. Number two, soften the blowing in case it doesn't work out. He was onto something right there, too. So, you know, there's these coaches in the league, they've been around long enough. They've figured out how to psychologically play the game. And Sean Payton's ahead of the game in terms of that. But Rodgers, that's my guy, because he's thinking at an upper cortical structure level, and I love that when players do that.
And some of the trick with that is, you know, in Sean Payton's case, and he mentioned that he called the interview a mistake. That was his word, a mistake. There's sort of a lesson in there for all of us in our day-to-day lives, right? I mean, everyone maybe has some things that you want to get off your chest, and maybe that feels like the moment, but you have to find a way to catch yourself for a second. Go, wait a minute. Is this the right time and place to do that? And that's one of the things when Sean Payton made that error, and kind of twice in a row in 2 days. But I looked at that and said, you know, there's one of the times where I can directly relate to an NFL head coach and say, oh, I've had moments like that where maybe I've wanted to unload about something I didn't like or it felt unfair or whatever. But you have to catch yourself and realize I can't do that. What's the process for people that, you know, have to try to catch themselves and do that? Because that's one part of this. We're talking about the NFL. Everybody has those moments.
Right. Well, but here's the key. I mean, it's similar to a player. We have what's called the autonomic nervous system. You have the sympathetic and the parasympathetic side. The sympathetic side is where stress and anxiety live. The parasympathetic is where calm and performance lives. And when you're on the sympathetic side, which is stress, you will never play to your potential because you have muscle tension, heart rates up, respirations up, thinking narrows. See, Sean Payton was on the sympathetic side. His thinking narrowed. It was not a mistake. It wasn't a mistake. It was what he intended to say
exactly.
At the moment. Because he wasn't on the parasympathetic side where he could have been more analytical, critical thinking, and thought, you know, it's probably best that I put it in a very articulate way instead of just saying what I think at a reptilian level. So it wasn't a mistake. He just did not regulate himself so he could be on the parasympathetic side, thus operating on the sympathetic side. Now, that sounds like an anatomy lesson, but the reality is he didn't regulate himself, Sean. And so what we have to understand, when we're in a position of leadership, of power, of you know, I call it the three Vs, you know, verbal, visual, and a vocal leader, he has to understand Everything that comes out of his mouth is going to be scrutinized. He needs to be articulate. He needs to be charismatic. He needs to be a CEO-esque, and he doesn't have those skills. Now, you look at him and say, oh, well, he's won a Super Bowl in New Orleans. You go back and look. There's a lot of variables there, okay? A lot of variables, and I'm not saying it's a win with an asterisk. But to me, Sean Payton is not the greatest CEO in the NFL, that type of guy. He is going to put his foot in his mouth from time to time, and he's done it really early before we've even kicked it off on 23. So my lesson would be for Sean is to learn to regulate yourself before you communicate in people. You know, it's not you don't just have a free card to say what you wish and operate from that sympathetic side. It may go over well in meetings with players and coaches, but when you're in front of the media, you got to be able to regulate yourself so you're on that parasympathetic side. And then that's when you're charismatic. That's when you're articulate, and you can say things without chopping people's heads off.
And you know what it did too? And I'm sure this wasn't his intent, far from it, although he did speak to it in some of his remarks to Jared Bell of USA Today. Minded people, bounty gate. And for the people in New Orleans, I noticed after reading about this stuff on a lot of these sites, their postings from readers at the bottom, often not well thought out either. But from a number of New Orleans people, that's the Sean Payton we knew, especially after Bountygate, all the insecurity and all that anger and all that bitterness. He even took a shot at Goodell.
Yeah.
Said, well, a guy like Goodell, if he really wants to get you, he's going to come after you. And he was using that to talk about, for some reason, the Denver player who got suspended for gambling. I don't know why Roger Goodell would have a grudge. But Peyton's interpretation was, well, he played for my team, so they stuck it to him. I never heard Dan Campbell complain about the four players in Detroit who got suspended for gambling.
Correct.
And I never heard Ron Rivera in Washington complain about the guy he got suspended, the guy who got suspended for gambling. They never complained, but Payton did. I want to ask you about what you're doing this weekend upcoming. You've been invited by DeMarcus Ware to go back to the Hall of Fame ceremonies.
Yeah, you know, I'm finally going to go to Canton, Ohio, guys. DeMarcus Ware invited me a couple months ago. Me and my sons to go to Canton, Ohio. He's being inducted. It's just going to be a great weekend. Thursday night's the game. Friday, we're going to hang out a little bit. Saturday at noon is the ceremony, and then Saturday night's his party, and we're going to have a good time. You know, hopefully a lot of guys from the Super Bowl 50 team are going to be there that I've kept in touch with these last several years. But, you know, DeMarcus is a guy that he wrote a piece in my book, Sandy, and you've read my book.
I've read his piece.
Yeah, and
extraordinary.
You know, and the thing that's so powerful about DeMarcus is, you know, 6'4", 260 pounds, just a great, phenomenal athlete. But when he walked into my office, he said, you know, I got everything that you can put in a box. I got homes. I got cars. He goes, but I'm a little lost as a man. I'm a little lost at who I am. And obviously, he's given me permission to talk about this, and obviously, he wrote about it in my book. But he came in, and he was vulnerable. You know, he was vulnerable, Sean. He talked about, like, I got to figure out who I am. And through that, it was so powerful because that was the 15th Super Bowl season. And before that, Von Miller wouldn't come into my office and see me. But as soon as DeMarcus, you know, went out and says, man, this dude's actually a pretty cool dude, you know.
And that's a form of leadership, I suppose.
Yeah, it is a form. It's a form of what we call reverent leadership. And so,
and now you and Von Miller are very close.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's the only other time.
And he swears by you.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And the funny thing about those guys is they're like, you know, if I'd have known, Doc, that you do the things that you do and the way you do it, I would have started this way back in high school. And so that's a lesson to so many guys out there. You know, performance psychologists don't break you down, don't analyze you. We teach you tools. We teach you techniques to put in your toolbox. So when you're out there, you can regulate yourself, Sean, just like the Sean Paytons of the world who can't regulate or won't regulate himself. So
this is the regulated Sean.
This is the regulated one. This is the parasympathetic Sean.
That's right.
Versus the sympathetic. But yeah, great weekend. We look forward to it. Yeah. Me and my sons are going to have a great time.
Well, have a wonderful time out there in Canton. Obviously, if you want to know more about what Dr. Rick Brea and his team does, just go check it out at think14u.org. The four is a number, think14u.org. And we'll have an opportunity to talk to the good doctor as the season goes along.
Absolutely.
As
many
well.
Times.
So thanks for stopping by and coming in studio, and looking forward to next time already.
Great seeing you guys. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
I'll be happy to report to you next week What happened in Canton?
So what happens in Canton at least doesn't have to stay in Canton.
That's right.
Well, I like that.
It's all good stuff.
Well, we'll make sure we talk more with the doctor. Think1ForYou.org is the website. We'll take a look at the Denver Broncos now. Down two wide receivers. What does that mean for Sean Payton's offense? We'll discuss next on Miles Sports.
This is Sandy Clough and Sean Drotar on Mile High Sports.
Sandy, when we look at the Denver Broncos now, Tim Patrick out for the season. Multiple reports now confirming the torn left Achilles tendon. Right. A complete tear, season over. We know that KJ Hamler's been waived with a non-football injury. He had the pectoral injury, now diagnosed pericarditis. A possibility, I guess, the Broncos bring him back, but he's not on the roster at all.
No.
So, I mean, there's two wide receivers that you have to presume aren't going to be there. The Broncos offense under Sean Payton was going to look very different than it was going to look under Nathaniel Hackett. It's obviously going to be a work in progress. But for the Broncos now and the wide receiver spot and getting rid of with Russell Wilson, I mean, how do you even look at having enough to make sure the practices run the way you want it to go? It feels like you're going to have to add some people that are more than just depth, more than the Michael Bandys of the world. You're going to have to find somebody who's proven that they can catch a football at the NFL level and in games.
Well, it becomes a wide receiver by committee, doesn't it? Even more so. Now, I think it is fair to suggest that Judy, on the basis of what he showed over the last six games, may be capable of being a full-fledged, legitimate number one wide receiver. And Cortland Sutton, if he catches 65 to 70 footballs this year, would be a suitable second wide receiver. Maybe you don't really have a third wide receiver. Maybe you have a combination of guys who in certain situations can be used to the best of their abilities, and certain situations where you might look to somebody else, depending on matchups and so on. The interesting thing when Dr. Puri was talking about how misfortune can create opportunity for others, I think Kendall Hinton is a perfectly serviceable and very bright player who can absorb information, process
leading
information,
receiver last year.
And I think he's okay. He's not a star, but he doesn't have to be. He can fill a role. Callaway's advantage is he knows something about this offense that most Broncos don't. And maybe you throw in a third guy. Maybe it's Mims. Or maybe it's a guy you pick up. And you can find a way. It's kind of the old money ball theory where you lose a particular player and you have an amalgamation of guys who replace that player and combine create similar value, maybe even superior value to the one player you lost. And here you lose one player who has established himself as a serviceable possession receiver in the National Football League, maybe even a better than average possession receiver in the NFL, and you have two or three guys who are all built differently, have different skills, and they combine so that you're able to replace the one guy in terms of production, at least.
Now,
the Broncos
are not on this wavelength, but the reason why I think that you're bringing up a good point, Sandy, and the idea of, you know, wide receiver by committee kind of runs counter to the way people believe things should work. You want to pay the big, you know, big receivers big money. Okay, but let's look at a team that knows how to do that. They're the defending champs. Now, Travis Kelce, of course, is a one-man army, 1,338 yards and 12 touchdowns.
Well, exactly what happened with Tyreek Hill last year. I'd agree.
But Juju Smith-Schuster was their second leading receiver, 933 yards and 3 touchdowns.
Right.
Juju Smith-Schuster, at this point of his career, wasn't even invited back.
That's
He's on the Patriots now.
That's right.
So the Chiefs believe that they can do that. Last year, the next three receiver was Marquez Valdes-Scantling, good bounce around. Jerick McKinnon, the running back. The next was their wide receiver, Justin Watson, who you might not be able to pick out of a lineup. Mm-hmm. Noah Gray behind him. Then Mecole Hardman. And rookie
Who's gone now, right?
And rookie Sky Moore. Kadarius Toney. Yeah. This is how the Chiefs got it done with wide receiver by committee. That's their leading wide receiver. They looked at it for the second year in a row. The Chiefs have taken their leading wide receiver, not Kelsey, who they realize you're replaceable, but Tyreek Hill and Juju Smith-Schuster went, thanks, see ya.
You're replaceable.
So
you're replaceable. The Broncos, Tyreek Hill was a hell of a player for Miami last year and is no less a player.
And Smith-Schuster will probably lead the Patriots in receiving yards.
The Chiefs played Moneyball.
It's the plays, it's the timing, and yes, it's the quarterback. But it's the play design and working the reps out. And you're right. Instead of spending the $20 million plus on receivers, they certainly invested in Kelsey. Right. But they realized, you know what? We can get the Valdes-Scantlings and the Mecole Hardmans of the world and the Kadarius Tonys of the world, and they'll be, for us, good enough to get the job done. Greg Dulcich is not Travis Kelsey. But the idea is, yes, when you look at certain positions and the expenditure of where your money has to go, the Broncos spent a lot of money on getting Tim Patrick and Courtland Sutton signed. Both contracts, which, by the way, at the time, I don't recall anybody saying terrible idea. In the last few years, now that the receiver salaries have gone through the roof, and all of a sudden some of these deals, Tim Patrick at $10 million, despite the injuries,
part of that was, too, that Judy was so disappointing his first 2 years.
Right.
So they, in November of 21, they're looking at Judy.
But they invested a first round pick. They invested a second round pick in Hamler. They invested a second round pick in
Hamler. Hamler hadn't done it.
But if they do,
but
then you get them at cost effective price, and you know, maybe you move on.
Now you have Sean Payton coming in.
Mm-hmm.
Sean Payton is from the Bill Parcells school of paying wide receivers no more than what they determine as his value. Yep. And not a penny more than that. And $20 million a year receivers, or the equivalent during Parcells' coaching days, didn't play for the Giants. And they didn't play for the Patriots. And they didn't play for the Jets. People like, I don't know, didn't Troy Brown start his career playing for Parcells? Maybe not. Maybe I'm wrong on that. But that was the kind of receiver. And Belichick came in. Belichick had the same philosophy. Payton has the same philosophy.
In 2020, when the
Payton
Saints
is aghast that Cortland Sutton is making $18 million.
The Saints went 12-4 that year when Sean Payton was coaching in 2020. Do you remember who their leading receiver was?
No, it wasn't Thomas.
It was Alvin Kamara, but it was for the yards. But their leading receiver, wide receiver, was Emmanuel Sanders.
Yeah.
Their second leading receiver was Traquan Smith. Then it was Michael Thomas, who had the injuries.
Well, and he had the injuries.
It was Marquez Callaway, who is now, by the way, a Denver Bronco. Right. In 2021, Peyton's last year, which they still went 9-8 with Trevor Siemian being the quarterback for the majority of the snaps, their leading receiver that year, despite the fact they were a winning team.
Yes.
Was Callaway again.
Yeah.
Callaway on now the Broncos, and Deonte Hardy, and then Traquan Smith.
So this is not.
And by the way, their fifth receiver was Adam Trautman, who's now a Bronco, and little Jordan Humphrey behind him, now a Bronco.
The point being that this is not, for Peyton, a problem that is going to cause him to lose much
sleep. Less of a problem
now,
for Peyton.
Now, we've been rough on Peyton today, and with good reason, I think. But in this particular case, you're dealing with a coach who doesn't believe that there should be maybe more than four or five receivers making $20 million, and they're probably not going to play for him. There are, I believe, 13 in the NFL right now, receivers making $20 million or more. But that's it. Out of 32 teams and 64 to 96, quote-unquote, starting wide receivers, 13 are making $20 million or more. And Tyreek Hill was one of them. The Chiefs said, we're not paying Tyreek Hill that kind of money.
It's quite possible the Broncos are going to go that route, and I think that's a good point. It's not good news for the Denver Broncos. But the coach,
in no way is.
But
it
the
good
coach
news.
They have happens to be
one of those
perhaps
guys,
one of those guys that knows how to work around it.
And you know, the Broncos, I think, were third last year in the money devoted to wide receivers. And Sean Payton, I'm sure, one of the first things he did, take one look at that and say, "That's ridiculous." For a team that went 5-12, to be that expensive at the wide receiver position. That's why I don't think Sutton is long for the Broncos. And I think the Broncos, particularly with Sutton, were pretty aggressive in trying to move him during the offseason. They were also aggressive about asking for a second-round pick, which no team in its right mind was ever going to get.
If you were curious, by the way, where the Broncos are this year in spending on the wide receiver position, it's number one, $44 million, just ahead of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Amazing. We'll find out more. Thanks so much to Drew Kreisman for joining us as the Rockies make a deal. The trade deadline tomorrow at 4 p.m. Dr. Rick Perea joining us tomorrow. We'll have Cody Rourke join us, of course, from the Broncos training camp. He'll pop in and talk to us. If you haven't checked out Cody's show, by the way, in the mornings, 9 a.m. on YouTube. Check out the Miley Sports Channel. Cody there every morning for Good Morning Broncos. We'll have him tomorrow. Thanks to you for listening. Welcome to the new spot. Hope you enjoyed it. I know we are definitely going to do so. Thanks to Danny Bailey for making everything work. And mostly to all of you listening on air over the web of MileySports.com. Watch or listen, or even at the best place. Just grab the app and all of it's in your pocket. Whether you missed any part of the show, easy and ready to go. For Sandy Clough, I'm Sean Drotar. We'll catch you tomorrow, but keep it right here on Mile High Sports.
I sit cursing my government for not using my taxes to fill holes with more cement. You fell asleep in my car. I drove the whole time.
This is the story of a daughter, of handstands, lemonade stands, and first corsages, and that perfect driver's license picture.
Travelers, this is Carlos.
Someone just hit my car.
Is everyone okay? Are you safe?
It's also the story of an insurance company that believes people always come first. If it matters to you, Travelers Insurance will help protect it. Travelers, it's better under the umbrella. Speak to an independent agent today.
Attention, King Super shoppers. Did you know there's a world of innovative services and patient care right in store? It's where an award-winning pharmacy and nationally recognized care come together. Connect with one of our licensed pharmacists today at your local King Supers and experience the care you and your family deserve. King Supers, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance.